log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Students at prestigious Georgetown University protested in defense of the latest academic detained and scheduled for deportation by the administration of Donald Trump, Badr Khan Suri, their professor at the school's Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding.
One, we are demanding the release of Dr. Suri. Two, we are demanding that this university become a sanctuary campus, which means the university must not allow ICE, DHS, and MPD onto campus, and the university must not aid in the arrest and deportation of students. And three, we are demanding complete divestment from entities complicit in the ongoing genocide in Palestine.
Hundreds of protesters have been arrested recently across the United States at rallies for deported scholars. Many for the most notorious deportation case, that of Mahmoud Khalil at Columbia University in New York City. Both Suri and Khalil were legal U.S. residents, married to American citizens, and never charged with breaking any laws. Unlike Khalil, Suri was not involved in political activism, but was still charged with allegedly spreading pro-Hamas propaganda.
One academic's deportation read, quote, "Your presence or activities in the United States would have adverse consequences for the foreign policy of the United States." The question is, adverse for whom?
We can see through the military-industrial complex, the one that is making the ruling class in this country millions, billions of dollars, that if that was to be threatened, if Palestine was to be liberated, if the masses of this country actually are educated on what's happening and not being fed the U.S. propaganda around what we're seeing in the Middle East, it would be not detrimental to the U.S. foreign policy and the U.S. Domestic policy as well, but just more so detrimental to these people's pockets.
The United States is currently undergoing a lengthy anti-Palestinian witch hunt, which can only be compared to the anti-socialist Red Scares from 1917 to 1920, and then again from 1947 to 1957.
It hasn't just started with Donald Trump. You know, it's gotten much worse, but there was already, you know, efforts here on campus to repress pro-Palestinian speech. It's never been truly welcomed as free speech, even before Donald Trump.
A federal judge just blocked the deportation of Suri, but refused to release him back to his wife and three young children, and Suri remains in jail. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
In the United States, he may be considered persona non grata. But here, South Africa's expelled ambassador Ibrahim Rasool is evidently loved and celebrated. A horde of supporters awaited him as he touched down after being condemned by the White House. In his first words to the public back on South African soil, the veteran politician said he stood by his comments and has no regrets.
in a very strange way, the fact that what I said caught the attention of the President and the Secretary of State and moved them enough to declare me persona non grata says that the message went to the highest office in the United States of America, that they were stung by our characterization and they were not happy with it. And so the diplomacy of Ubuntu has certainly worked because we bore witness to the values of our society.
The ancient African concept of Ubuntu says that life is premised on humanity to others, that no single entity is better than the other. And it is this principle that the ANC, even while seeking diplomatic engagement with the Trump administration, seeks to uphold.
This rally of support serves not only as a warm welcome for Ambassador Ibrahim Rasool, but also as a defiant protest against the United States for its position on South Africa. Washington's decision to expel Pretoria's envoy has garnered and sparked a strong amount of anti-American sentiment.
The consensus is that America's steps against South Africa is directly linked to its stance on Palestine. Rasool said trade deals could not trump principles.
We would have preferred to come here to say that we have won for you a AGOA, but we could not win it by withdrawing our case from the International Court of Justice against Israel, because as we stand here, the bombing has continued and the shooting has continued. And if South Africa was not in the ICJ, Israel would not be exposed and the Palestinians would have no hope.
Just as Israel's genocidal campaign against Palestine has exposed its true nature, for a South Africa which once took an affable posture towards the US, America has now shown its true hand, and South Africans are vociferously opposing it. Hassan Siri, Cape Town.
Another successful military operation was carried out by Yemen's armed forces, targeting both U.S. and Israeli positions, and once again forcing Israel to close one of its main airports.
The missile force of the Yemeni armed forces targeted Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied area of Jaffa with a hypersonic ballistic missile of the Palestine Type 2, and the operation achieved its goal successfully, thanks to God, which led to the suspension of air navigation at the airport for more than half an hour, as part of the response to the American aggression that launched dozens of raids on our country during the past hours. Our forces clashed with the American aircraft carrier, USS Harry Truman, and a number of hostile war pieces in the Red Sea, with a number of missiles and drones, and the confrontations lasted for several hours.
The latest military operations come amidst the pro-Palestinian You Are Not Alone conference held in the capital Sana'a, where Yemeni politicians and researchers joined to discuss growing U.S. and Zionist threats.
Our goal in this conference is to send a message to the Zionist enemy, the Americans and Britons, that no matter how much you attack Yemen, Palestine, Lebanon, or even if you attack Iran, you will never deter us from our firm position on the Palestinian cause.
According to one of the researchers at the conference, Arab Zionism is paving the way for Israel to continue its genocide in Gaza and expand its influence throughout the region.
Based on my research, I can say one of the main issues is Arab Zionism. Arab Zionism works hand in hand with the Zionists to push forward their agenda against the Arab and Islamic world. They work to demonize the resistance and engage in political maneuvers to achieve surrender and normalize ties with the Zionists in order to give up the Palestinian cause.
Yemeni experts expect that the U.S. and Israel are currently trying to convince Saudi Arabia and the UAE to join the military effort against Yemen. Yemen has warned that if that happens, Aramco oil facilities will be destroyed completely. For a week straight, the Yemeni armed forces have continued their retaliatory attacks against both American and Israeli positions. The U.S. has warned of sending more reinforcements to the Red Sea, which, according to Ansar Allah, will only result into more U.S. targets being hit. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
A last
large crowd marched through the Austrian capital Vienna to express their support for the people and the resistance in Gaza. The Boycott Israel movement, BDS Austria, organized a demonstration coinciding with the international mobilization of Israeli Apartheid Week.
We have a responsibility to stand up and fight for what is right, because decolonizing Palestine is decolonizing the world.
The organizers collaborated with the Palestine Committee and Vienna's Iranian and Shia communities to mark Al-Quds Day. The participants and speakers stressed their continued solidarity with the anti-imperialist struggles in Palestine, Lebanon and Yemen. They emphasized that these struggles were inspired by the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran.
The Al-Quds Day, which is actually this week, because Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, is ending, the Al-Quds Day means that we have to fight against imperialism, we have to fight against Zionism, we have to support our brothers and sisters in Palestine, where the genocide is already again ongoing. And we have the duty to do our best to support them from here.
We are celebrating Al-Quds Day as a way of sort of giving the people, and knowing that the people, let the people know that the Palestinian people have the right to live, they have a right to their land, and the occupation obviously has to stop.
Al-Quds Day is a wake-up call for all humankind to rally behind Palestine.
This wake-up call is really giving the people a type of understanding of what is going on in the world today and how we can solve this problem.
Saturday's demonstration was the largest in Vienna since the beginning of the year.
Colonialism continues. The Western states, including Austria, are continuing their colonial policy, which started in the 19th century. They support a colonial apartheid state, and Austria plays the same role in supporting this colonial policy as any other Western state.
A video emerged of a private meeting of the Israeli ambassador to Austria, in which he called for the murder of children in Gaza and claimed to have daily contact with the Austrian chancellor. The following day, hundreds marched through Vienna to mark Al-Quds Day and show their opposition to the pro-Israeli policy of the Austrian government. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Since the resumption of Israeli genocide last week, over 600 Palestinians have been killed, including at least 200 children. In history, a large number of people also suffered critical injuries.
After the 18th of March, Israeli warplanes have carried out unprecedented attacks that we did not witness since April 2024. More than 1,000 attacks left 400 martyrs only on the first day, including 200 children and 80 women. 85% of civil defense capabilities were destroyed as well. The Israeli occupation uses both displacement and starvation as means of war. For more than 20 days, we are in a real starvation.
The situation in Gaza has dramatically worsened with the launch of Israeli ground invasion earlier this week, reigniting the never-stop genocide across the besieged territory and forcing almost 300,000 to flee their already ruined homes from northern and eastern parts of the Strip.
In the early morning, there was a very heavy and loud explosion in a nearby area. I couldn't move and got injured. It was horrific. We were already displaced, and now everything is worse. They committed a massacre in our neighborhood, killing 24 innocent people in a blink of an eye.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has condemned the aggression, calling it catastrophic for Gaza's young residents, and reported that more than 200 children were killed since Israel renewed its airstrikes and ground offensives on Tuesday, further deepening the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The people of Gaza continue to endure the devastating consequences of a genocide that shows no sign of abating, with the loss of innocent lives, especially among children, marking the tragic cost of the Israeli aggression. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
For more than 2 months, Palestinian students have been deprived of one of their most basic rights, education. Due to oppressive measures imposed by the Israeli occupation, schools have been closed, and the entire educational process has been disrupted, making it impossible for students to attend classes. School entrances were blocked with dirt mounds, and anyone who approached the area faced the risk of being shot.
For the past 4 months, due to the security situation, we haven't been able to go to school and receive education. The entrances to schools have been completely closed, and anyone who gets close is shot at. The occupation hasn't just displaced us and deprived us of our homes, but also our schools.
Despite these overwhelming challenges, the Palestinian people did not lose hope. Groups of volunteer teachers emerged, determined to continue education in any way possible. These fearless teachers did not wait for schools to reopen or the blockades to be lifted. They go directly to the places where students had been displaced, bringing with them books and educational materials. Moreover, they organized recreational activities to ease the psychological burden on the children, trying to bring smiles back to their faces.
I love my school, my teachers, and I love to study. But the occupation has deprived me of my school, burned my textbooks, and forced us out of our homes. I hope to return to my school, see my teachers and friends, and play with them.
These children have lost their houses, and they've been living in this shelter since 2 months now, since the start of this operation. And they've been deprived from getting a formal education since their schools have been closed for so long. So we as teachers, in cooperation with Al Qatan organization, have thought to do something for these kids. So we come here every weekend to give them some activities, give them, let's say, some informal education. Israeli forces blocked the main roads connecting cities to refugee camps and nearby villages, leaving teachers stranded and unable to reach their workplaces. Many teachers who worked in schools outside their villages found themselves cut off due to the barriers and dirt mounds, further complicating the educational landscape. These blockades not only severed the physical connection between regions, but also symbolically cut off the students' path to their future, denying them the opportunity to learn and grow. For over 2 months, the Israeli regime has denied Palestinian students their right to education and prevented them from reaching their schools, while they are suffering from displacement as well. Tiba Asi, occupied Jenin.
Yemenis have fired more hypersonic missiles at the occupied Palestinian territories, targeting vital structures of the Israeli regime. Moments later, sirens wail across Israel, sending Israelis scrambling as the reality of the genocide their cabinet is committing in Gaza comes crashing down. Yemeni military officials say this is just the beginning of Yemen's military role, and what's to come in the future will be more severe to both the U.S. and Israel.
First, our operation started with the purpose of ending the Israeli siege in Gaza. However, the U.S. insisted on directly intervening to support Israel as an indication that the battle ahead will be a big battle. We may soon enter round six of our military escalations, in which we will use new advanced hypersonic ballistic missiles. We expect this will be a long war, since the U.S. wants to continue its support for the Zionist entity.
Yemenis say their government's military operations against Israel and the U.S. are historic.
Our military operations are defending the pride and honor of Muslims. This will be remembered in history as a great stance that everyone will remember. We thank our leaders and our armed forces, and we thank all those who are standing with Palestine.
Yemenis also condemn the U.S. attempt to stop Yemen's pro-Palestinian military efforts.
Our military operations prove that we are serious in our commitment to the Palestinian cause. It's also in response to the U.S. aggression. They are trying to stop us from attacking Israel, but they will never achieve their goal.
Due to the relentless Yemeni attacks, Ben-Gurion Airport in the occupied Palestine has been forced to shut down temporarily, while the USS Harry Truman has been overwhelmed with the Yemeni arsenal assault.
Yemen's anti-Israeli operations continue with the armed forces targeting U.S. warships in the Red Sea and launching missile attacks at the occupied territories. What's clear is that despite the U.S. airstrikes, Military operations in support of Palestine remain strong and unshakable. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, all praises due to God, Lord of the worlds, and may peace and greetings be upon our Master and our Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. And upon his untainted, pure, chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I'm grateful to Almighty God that this gathering is being held again and for this pleasant, beautiful meeting and listening experience that this session provides. I also praise and thank Almighty God for the continuous increase in the number of Quran reciters. Today, our eyes and ears were enlightened. And we truly enjoyed the recitations that were performed by individuals from different cities of various ages and in diverse styles. They were all devoted to the Quran and reciting. We ask Almighty God to make this Ramadan a true celebration and a blessing for the entire Iranian nation and for each and every one of you. Subhanallah, I believe is important is for us to be able to quench society's thirst, our own society first, with the inexhaustible foundation of the Quran. We need this. We need it very much. There are problems in our individual lives, our personal lives, our morals, our behavior, and our spiritual growth that can be solved with the Quran. This also applies to our life in society, which includes relationships within society. That is, our communications with one another, our cooperating with each other, our interactions, and our mutual affection for one another. Another part of our life involves our dealing with those outside our society. These are our concerns. In all these areas, both in personal matters and in social issues within the society as well as outside the society, we face challenges that can be solved using the Quran. The Quran can guide us in these areas and take us by the hand.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. I want
now with you. How about you, Arabi English Radio? Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Israeli airstrikes have intensified in the Gaza Strip, resulting in more death and destruction in the besieged territory. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza has now risen to above 50,000, which means around 1 in 50 people has been killed in the territory since the start of the genocidal war, with most of the victims being women and children. Reports indicate Israel is now planning for a more aggressive invasion of Gaza that could last months or even longer. Also, the regime's cabinet has established a new office that will work to remove all Palestinians from Gaza in line with U.S. President Donald Trump's ethnic cleansing plan for the enclave. To discuss that and more, our guests for this edition of Spotlight are Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us from Beirut. And we also have Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Khumsia joining us from Bethlehem.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the program. Let's start off with Ms. Cates. The death toll from the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide in Gaza has now surpassed 50,000, over 113,000 others injured, most of them women and children. Share with us your views regarding the resumption of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, which in just one day claimed the lives of hundreds of Palestinians. And what makes it more horrifying is that the international community stands idly by.
What we are seeing right now is a genocide that is being carried out not simply with the silence and the complicity of the so-called international community, which is largely the imperialist powers led by the United States, Europe, Canada, etc., but a genocide in which they are full and active participants, because these parties are continuing to sell the weapons to the Zionist regime to carry out the genocide. They're continuing to buy the weapons. They're continuing to engage in free trade agreements with this genocide. There is no discussion of the so-called responsibility to protect, which has been promoted by these states in order to support invasions of sovereign countries around the world. At the same time, the only state that is acting militarily to defend the Palestinian people is Yemen. I mean, of course, alongside the ongoing support of Iran and the resistance forces in Lebanon, Iraq, and elsewhere, what we have is that these are the forces that are standing up to defend any sense of international law or humanity. What we are witnessing is a genocide that's being televised on live TV to the world, but it's not only being televised, but it's being celebrated by, you know, U.S. President Donald Trump, who is actively engaging as a war criminal, as a genocidaire, engaging in genocide propaganda, promoting the ethnic cleansing and the dispossession of the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip and throughout occupied Palestine. And really, this is a comprehensive war on the Palestinian people, because we're seeing that these attacks are not only happening in Gaza, but we're also seeing the displacement of Palestinians in the refugee camps in the West Bank for months now. That's going on and ongoing, and, you know, a daily diet of killing, destruction, and murder. This is the reality of what Zionism is. This is the reality of what imperialism is.
Mazen Rumsia, while Gazans anticipated the second phase of the ceasefire agreement, the Israeli regime went on to violate the truce by launching strikes on the besieged strip, even targeting hospitals. The ceasefire was doomed since day one, wasn't it, with the likes of Benjamin Netanyahu still around. He has brazenly bragged about not wanting peace with Palestinians.
In fact, indeed, from day one of this supposed ceasefire, after the agreement, Israel violated it, for example, by limiting the entry of caravans, refusing entry of caravans, and limiting the entry of tents to the Gaza Strip, and then immediately after started killing Palestinians in the Gaza Strip during the so-called ceasefire. So when Israel says that they have ended the ceasefire now, officially, this is kind of like, okay, now we've expanded the violations of the ceasefire by actually massively killing children, 200 children in one day, for example. And, you know, I have friends in Gaza. One of them called me and told me about what happened to his family, and a tent that's right next to him was burned, including all of his cousins and their children. And his mother, who was in a tent next to him, is in critical condition. This happened Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. So, and this same person had, of course, 6 months earlier, his house was attacked, and his three-year-old child, her name is Leanne, was burned on 60% of her body. So we are witnessing, as Charlotte mentioned, a genocide, full-fledged, horrific, beyond description, unprecedented. It's hard to come up even with words to describe what is happening.
Right. Let's go back to Charlotte Cates. Here's what it where it gets really appalling. According to the Washington Post, the Israeli forces are gearing up for a major ground operation in Gaza that could last months or even longer. The Post spoke with current and former Israeli officials who have explained that the quote-unquote new and more aggressive tactics would probably include direct military control of humanitarian aid. The officials said, those who are not evacuated would face a siege that is more is a more intense version of a tactic employed last year in northern Gaza. More intense tactics against what? Gaza has been reduced to rubble. It's just displaced people, and the majority of those are innocent women and children.
One of the facts is that the Zionist regime does not do well in ground invasions of Gaza, because they're unable to rely on their air power and their U.S.-made and U.S.-provided and paid for by U.S. tax dollars weaponry of warfare, and instead have to rely on the ability of their soldiers to fight. And what we've seen is that every time these soldiers are confronted by the Palestinian resistance, rather than when they're confronted by, civilians and women and children and elderly men that they can beat, kidnap, and torture in Zionist prisons, they face significant losses and casualties on an ongoing basis. And so, you know, the Zionist regime wants to avoid essentially the necessary consequences of any kind of a ground invasion by essentially trying to starve people into submission. I mean, the purpose of these kinds of attacks is twofold. They want to drive Palestinians out of Gaza completely, and they want to drive Palestinians out of Palestine from the river to the sea completely. But they also want to divide the Palestinian people from their leadership and from the resistance in order to have an easier path to that dispossession. And we've seen this before in Palestinian history. We've seen this on many occasions, and this is one reason why the Palestinian people are very aware of the types of schemes that are being attempted by the Zionist regime, because they want an easier path for their ground invasion by attempting to turn the people against the resistance through the imposition of an absolutely inhumane genocidal siege accompanied by airstrikes, bombings, drones, the mass killing of children, and an assassination policy that is aimed at targeting those who are leading governmental, charity, humanitarian work, not to mention the journalists. Like today, the targeting of the martyrs Mohammed Mansour and Hossam Shabbat, who are covering and exposing the reality of the Zionist genocide before the world. And so there's a constant stream of both military assaults and also a propaganda and psychological war that is meant to make Palestinians in Gaza feel even more alone than they already are. This is a comprehensive war that is being carried out by the U.S., by the Zionist regime, and by their fellow imperialist powers upon this small sector of land, of Palestinian land, which continues to stand as like the symbol of resistance, of courage, and of integrity in this world.
Mazen Romsia, a new office within the Ministry of Military Affairs has been established that is tasked with removing all Palestinians from Gaza. Israel Katz said that Tel Aviv is moving forward with President Donald Trump's plan for Gaza, and that the cleansing of Gaza is in line with Trump's vision. So by proposing a plan that entails a full ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, Donald Trump has effectively endorsed and legitimized the Israeli genocide in Gaza, hasn't he?
Well, the plans to ethnically cleanse Gaza are Zionist plans going back to the early 1950s, which are now being implemented via the actions. And then obviously Trump, as being a so-called president of the United States appointed by his Zionist handlers, is going to regurgitate whatever plans they put on his desk. And so he regurgitated the plans that the Zionists had for decades before he was even born. So the idea that this plan is something new, or that the creation of an office openly is something new, well, all the Israeli government offices, from the prime minister's office to the so-called absorption office to the identity office that issues identity cards, all these offices in the Zionist regime government have one and main task, which is to make Palestine a Jewish state, period, end of story. This has been their function, their goal as a colonizing power from the beginning. So creation of one more so-called office for handling this is interesting in that it's being openly spoken about, but other than that, it's nothing new. In terms of what it can do and what it would do, this is something we have to pay attention to, They are going to use humanitarian aid, by the way, as a weapon also.
Sure.
I'm sure soon they will restrict humanitarian aid going through the hands of the Israeli military to give it just to collaborators and people who are willing to sell their souls to the devil, so to speak. And then they are going to say, we are delivering humanitarian aid to Gaza. This is, exposed and has been used before. For example, the people that are being treated now in Egypt and elsewhere had to sign documents and had to, blackmailed by the Israelis to approve their removal from Gaza.
Charlotte Cates, in a statement coming from this office, it says that it would be working to prepare for and enable safe and controlled passage of Gaza residents for their voluntary departure to third countries. The statement also added, we're working with all means to implement the U.S. president's vision, and we will allow any Gaza resident who wants to move to a third state to do so. So what about those who do not want to leave their homeland, with Arab nations like Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt already rejecting the displacement of Gazans? What's the scenario like? The Israelis, they just kill every Gazan who stays?
Well, the fact is that, for example, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt are not fulfilling their responsibilities. Instead, they are allowing the genocide to continue. Egypt is right on the border with Gaza. Egypt has the ability to open the border in the direction of entering Gaza for aid and for support, and not to allow the Zionist regime to exercise sole control over the resources. And it's within its capacity to do that. It's refusing to do that because it's dependent on U.S. aid and funding. That's the reality. So the fact is that Palestinians don't want to go to a third country. This was visibly illustrated in Gaza when there was this massive march of return of Palestinians returning to their homes in the north of Gaza. But it's important to also say here that over 70% of Palestinians in Gaza are refugees from occupied Palestine 1948. These are refugees who were driven from their homes and lands during al-Nakba, and they are waiting to return to their homes in Ascalon, in Bisan, in Haifa, in Yaffa, and throughout occupied Palestine. So this is the only place where Palestinians from Gaza are interested in going to. And this is one of the reasons why what we're seeing right now is this assault on the refugee camps in the West Bank combined with this genocide in Gaza. And it's a genocidal approach altogether, because what it's targeting is Palestinians' commitment and drive and desire and unbreakable will to return to their own homes and lands that were stolen from them by the creation of the Zionist entity in 1948. Palestinians have a right to return under international law. That is a right that is not just collective, it is individual, and it belongs to every single Palestinian who is displaced from their home or who is the descendant of those who were initially displaced in 1948. And so they're trying to not just strip the Gaza Strip of its people and strip Palestine of its people. They're trying to strip Palestinians of their right to return. And this has been a tactic of the Zionist regime and of the imperialist powers backing, funding, and supporting it since its inception for over 77 years.
Sure. Mazen Homsia, early on in the conflict, it's reported that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had ordered the head of the Israeli military to hit thousands of targets without intelligence, including homes. This is without a doubt a war crime. International legal efforts must be activated to prosecute Israeli war criminals in both international and domestic courts worldwide, to ensure that they do not escape justice. In your opinion, what steps must be taken to prosecute these war criminals, and how can the issue of accountability begin to take shape?
First and foremost, we must redouble the effort and increase all the movements around the world in all the cities and all the countries. We must encourage people to get out on the streets. There's also an attack on free speech in Western countries that has to be ended. We need to stop that attack. We need to challenge them in legal fora and everything. There must be a global uprising, a global intifada against oppression, against this genocide. this applies pressure demands, but additionally, we can work on the International Court of Justice and International Criminal Court. We should support South Africa and other countries who are willing to take a principled stance on this. And we should challenge the regimes that support and enable this. That is, the dictatorial regimes in the Arab world should be challenged by their own people. And we already see signs of this beginning to happen. We should work with the BRICS countries on creating an alternative world that's away from this imperial system. So there are many things to do, but unfortunately, in the meantime, our people continue to suffer.
Charlotte Cates, let's talk about the Trump administration's hypocrisy of reining in the military spending for Ukraine, but not reining in the billions of dollars of military support for Israel, which is being used to slaughter women and children.
Well, you know, let's be clear. Trump essentially won this election under false pretenses. He promoted himself as a candidate who was against war, who wanted to see peace in the world, who, you know, didn't promote the idea of the U.S. as the police of the world, etc. Well, what are we seeing in reality? What we're seeing is not an end to U.S. imperialism. It's simply a shifting of the priorities of U.S. imperialism to the key priorities that have always been key priorities, such as the maintenance of the Zionist project in Palestine. This is one area in which Biden and Trump were in full agreement, along with Kamala Harris, that the ongoing genocide was of critical importance to the United States and its interests in the region, because its interests are not in promoting peace and justice. Now, this has nothing to do with the interests of the public in the United States. There's a reason why, you know, campuses across the country erupted in an uprising that's now trying to be met with policing, repression, deportations, and violence at the hands of the state. There's a reason why millions of people in every city across the United States took to the streets against the genocide. The fact is that people do not see any interest in the slaughter and massacre of Palestinians and the destruction of schools and refugee camps and homes and mosques and churches and hospitals and, you know, essentially every form of life. That's not something that the people in the U.S. see an interest in, but it is something that the ruling class, the big weapons companies, they do see it in their interests and to continue this genocide and to continue placing this illegitimate Zionist entity in the heart of the Arab region to create division, to create destruction, and to prevent people from controlling their own future, their own resources, and their own destiny. And so the fact is this whole discussion about Trump's plan, Donald Trump has no legitimate voice in anything that happens in Gaza or anything that happens in Palestine. The only people who have a legitimate voice in the future of Palestine are the Palestinian people and those they invite to be part of that process. And the fact is that Palestinians have called upon people around the world to take action, to boycott the Zionist regime, to protest everywhere, to besiege the embassies of the occupier everywhere they are located. And that includes within the heart of the imperial core, as well as it does in the Arab countries that have normalized with the Zionist regime over the past decades, to take meaningful direct action, to impose a significant economic cost upon those powers that continue to enable, support, arm, and fund genocide. And it's our responsibility in this movement to take the actions that are necessary to, you know, really put meaningful pressure, not just ask them, you know, that won't you change your mind? This has been, 18 months of ongoing genocide, atop of 77 years of ongoing genocide in occupied Palestine. They're not going to change their minds unless they don't.
Right, and one last question for Mr. Qomsia before we wrap up the show. Mr. Qomsia, despite massacres, starvation, systematic destruction. The Palestinian people have remained steadfast, holding on to their land and demonstrating an unbreakable will. How have Palestinians maintained their steadfastness amid the gut-wrenching massacres and destruction? What drives the Palestinian people to resist despite this overwhelming adversity?
Very brief, I'll tell you what my friend told me, that it's God is the only one that they can rely on, so they're relying on their faith in God. They're relying on their love of the country, love of their land, and in the inevitability that injustice and evil does not last forever.
Okay, we're going to go back to Ms. Cates. We lost you there. Ms. Cates, would you like to wrap up your response to the previous question as well?
Sure. I'm not sure where I was lost, but just to say that it's the responsibility of all of our movements to have meaningful action, to shut down the genocide, to shut down the empire, and to not allow.
Okay, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. We're going to end it there. Thanks to Ms. Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, joining us from Beirut. And also thanks to Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Rumsia, joining us from Bethlehem. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's edition of Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.